All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, May 10th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everybody. It is 50 degrees and sunny here in upstate New York. Feels very springy. And it's looking very springy, too. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Microbiome. Contagious obesity and personality transplants. We covered some pretty insane stuff with how the bacteria in our gut can influence our brains directly. We covered this about a year ago, showing how bad gut bacteria could be the crux of disease, causing leaky gut syndrome, which leads to autoimmune and a bunch of other things. There was also some research into how your gut bacteria can influence your brain directly. We looked at the vagus nerve and that direct connect that goes from your lower gut, it zigzags across your major organs and to the brain. DARPA's been doing all kinds of research in that ElectRx program that deals specifically with manipulating parts of the body through different types of stimulation of that nerve. And it seems now that the tech billionaires and all kinds of investors have dumped tons of money into studying the microbiome as a way to quote unquote cure disease. We looked at a story. This was one of the big ones that obesity could be as contagious as a super bug. It says for the first time, scientists in the UK have shown that a third of the spores produced by bacteria in the human gut can survive out in the open air. And we raised the question as to if that is true, you know, and they were saying that, well, maybe people that you live with, you know, you can catch their bacteria and get their ailments, including obesity, that it isn't typically necessarily in your genes. It could be something that you're picking up from somewhere else. We also looked at a story out of Nature, which is a scientific publication where they literally did a fecal transplant. We've talked about fecal transplants before. They would help people who had contracted that C. difficile, bad gut bacteria after taking antibiotics. It kills all the good stuff and the bad stuff moves in and causes major issues with digestion. But they found if they did a fecal transplant from a healthy person with healthy gut bacteria, they could cure the problem. But what researchers are finding now in their tests with mice confirms some thoughts that they've had before when they did a fecal transplant between a more reserved mouse who was scared of their own shadow, who wouldn't look over the edge, and they made an exchange with a more courageous mouse that didn't have fear and would look over the edge, that they literally swapped personalities when they swapped gut bacteria between them. So pretty frightening thought that you literally could affect the brain that drastically just by swapping out gut bacteria. We also saw a story toward the end of the show titled Mouth Bacteria May Hold Clues to Pancreatic Cancers. And they discovered that in a majority of the pancreatic cancer cases, each of those people had the same sort of mouth bacteria. This is not the first time we've heard this. They've warned for a long time. We'd mentioned with root canals that the bacteria in the mouth from root canals were popping out old amalgam fillings and putting in porcelain, let's say, and that bacteria that's underneath there, you don't want to be swallowing too much of that because bad oral health can have a direct impact on your heart, especially. There were lots of heart attacks and strokes that happened, but it's very possible that it could be cancer risk as well. They found two oral bacterias that correlated with elevated risks in pancreatic cancer patients. And this is early to be reading these. Porphyrmonges gingivalis and Agrobacter escamoides, who knows? People who carry those had a 59% overall greater risk of developing pancreatic cancer And for the second bacteria, so it was for the first, for the second bacteria, it was more than a 50% greater risk. And both types of bacteria have been linked to periodontal gum infections. So take care of your mouth. I mean, I think there's a lot more than we know. Bacteria is manipulating the way life is evolving here and our health, I think, more than we even know. At the very beginning of the show yesterday, we listened to a clip from a TED Talk with a gentleman named Rob Knight. I think he was a geneticist or some sort of genetic researcher, titled How Our Microbiomes Make Us Who We Are. And he was talking about the five different bacterial cultures that live on our body that live together in harmony or have wars, both happen. And they are directly influenced by what we eat and our environment. And as each of them wax and wane, because they have been able to map them in real time now, our health waxes and wanes as well. So there were a couple more stories I came across since yesterday. Here's a good one. Is the gut microbiome a potential cause and a therapeutic target for autoimmune diseases such as multiple sclerosis? Well, it would make sense for them to be looking at gut bacteria for autoimmune disease because, like we had mentioned, something that we discovered already a year ago in our own research is that typically when your gut bacteria is off, you end up with that leaky gut syndrome, which we will hear about here in a few minutes in a clip I have from an interview Dr. Mercola did. But it causes the leaky gut syndrome, which then allows particulates to pass through the small intestines without being properly digested, and it can then go in and cause autoimmune diseases. Numerous risk factors are believed to contribute to the development of autoimmune disorders such as multiple sclerosis. And new research is focusing on the role of bacteria in the gastrointestinal tract as well as other stress-related chemical signals that could have a stimulating effect on inflammation in the central nervous system. And that's one of the big issues is inflammation. Inflammation is the root cause of all disease. I think they've pretty much established that as telltale science. They have a lot of examples of that. And if you can keep inflammation down, you can keep disease down. Two comprehensive review articles are part of a focus on cytokines in neuroinflammation and immunity. I don't know. We don't have to read all these names. We had all these researchers describe three key characteristics of the gut microbiome related to immunity, cell activity, and cytokine production that may be relevant to the susceptibility to and treatment of autoimmune disorders such as multiple sclerosis. Now, as somebody who suffered from autoimmune diseases, and mind you, you don't get one autoimmune disease. You get one autoimmune disease, then that typically progresses to another autoimmune. And there is a large gamut of autoimmune diseases that then, you know, get progressively worse. And typically, not only is it from the crap you eat that affects your gut microbiome, we looked at McDonald's, the 10-day McDonald's diet, and how it devastated this guy's gut bacteria. And they did samples on a daily basis before and after eating. But, I mean, the antibiotics as well as the glyphosate that's in the food, glyphosate being a potent antibiotic, is what is responsible for devastating that gut bacteria. And once that gut bacteria is devastated, like I said, you have leaky gut. Stress also comes into play, as stress will cause you to go into trying to remember what it's called. Oh, it's when your glands are just so overactive from the stress hormones that they just give out. I don't remember. I'll remember what it's called. But it's what causes that sleep syndrome where you're so tired you can't move. I had that in the very beginning of when my autoimmune disorder started. And guess what fixed it? Getting rid of all the garbage out of my diet. Anyway, in the review article, Interferon Signal Transduction Pathways in the Central Nervous System, University of Maryland School of Medicine researchers explored in detail the latest research pointing to the role of cytokines, and in particular interferons, in contributing to the development of diseases that affect the central nervous system. The authors discuss the potential effects of either an excess of or a lack of interferons, the inflammatory effects of cytokines, and the new therapeutic research strategies. They said that the communications between the microbial community in the gut and the host's immune system is turning out to be remarkably complex and is likely to impact on the many aspects of both health and disease. And we have billions of bacteria and multiple different colonies of different bacteria that are interacting that directly affect not only our health, not only our immune systems, but our brains, our feelings, our thoughts, whether or not we're depressed, whether or not you're under the control of your cat. Remember, we talked about that toxoplasmosis and some of the research that they've done on that being infected and being more susceptible to your cat's wishes. And I know it sounds weird, but look it up, toxoplasmosis and brain control. There was another story exploring the gut-brain connection for insights into multiple sclerosis. Multiple sclerosis is also an autoimmune disease. New research by investigators at the Brigham and Women's Hospital suggests that bacteria living in the gut may remotely influence the activity of cells in the brain that are involved in controlling inflammation and neurodegeneration. Now, as we have this quote-unquote epidemic of dementia and autoimmune diseases, it's all seeming to be pointing back to the experimentation that they are doing with our food and then feeding us without our knowledge, or hiding it so they don't have to label it, or circumventing laws and coming up with new ways to genetically modify our food. And that is having a direct impact and changing the way our bodies work. Using a preclinical model for multiple sclerosis and samples from MS patients, the team found evidence that changes in the diet and gut flora may influence astrocytes in the brain and consequently neurodegeneration, pointing to the potential of therapeutic targets. The team's results are published in this week's Nature Medicine. For the very first time, we have been able to identify that food has some sort of remote control over central nervous system inflammation. Ding, da, da, ding, ding. What we eat influences the ability of bacteria in our gut to produce small molecules, some of which are capable of traveling all the way to the brain. This opens up an area that has largely been unknown until now, how the gut controls brain inflammation. Previous investigations have suggested a connection between the gut microbiome and brain inflammation, but how the two are linked and how the diet and microbial products influence this connection has remained largely unknown. To explore this connection further, researchers performed a genome-wide transcription analysis on astrocytes, which are the star-shaped cells that reside in the brain and in the spinal cord, in a mouse model of multiple sclerosis and identified a molecular pathway involved in inflammation. They found that molecules derived from dietary tryptophan, which is pretty interesting because tryptophan is that wonderful chemical that lives in turkey that makes you all happy, fat, and tired. This is an amino acid famously found in turkey and other foods. A tryptophan acts on this pathway, and that when more of these molecules are present, astrocytes were able to limit brain inflammation. So tryptophan limits brain inflammation. That is interesting. Though they inject turkeys with all kinds of horrifying drugs that you should read up on before running out to get a turkey and try to find an organic turkey, because you're not going to. And if you do, it'll be online for $352 to be shipped in a month to your home. It's pretty insane. I've already tried to find that. In blood samples from MS patients, the team found decreased levels of tryptophan-derived molecules. Deficits in the gut flora, deficits in diet, or deficits in the ability to uptake these products from the gut flora or transport them from the gut any of these may lead to deficits that contribute to disease progression. And one of the things that they discovered as well, it's pretty interesting, is that the bacteria work together to produce actual chemicals. They're like little chemical factories, and a lot of these chemicals are good and bad chemicals that then directly affect your brain. DARPA's been doing all kinds of research on different chemicals and how the brain reacts to them. And of course, that's part of the whole brain project. So it's pretty interesting that now we have science delving in headfirst into how to manipulate, control, and understand the microbiome and how it affects our brain. Don't think that this is all for your benefit and mine, because it's not. It's learning about how to manipulate and control as the puppeteer every bit of biology. In blood samples from MS patients, they found decreased levels of these tryptophan-derived molecules, and the research team plans to investigate this pathway and the role of diet in the future studies to determine if these new findings can be translated into targets for therapeutic intervention and biomarkers for diagnosing and detecting the advancement of disease. So heat your turkey. Spend your $352 on your organic turkey ordered online a month ahead of time, and maybe you won't get multiple sclerosis. I mean, how insane is that? So they've been poisoning our food system, and now they're looking at the exponential increase in quote-unquote Western diseases. I mean, we've tied a lot of it back to glyphosate and all the different bodily functions that it inhibits and causes problems with. And so there's a new story. This one's out of ScienceAlert.com. Scientists find 69 different factors that control your gut bacteria, including your choice of chocolate to contraceptives. It's anything we put into our mouth. You are what you eat. Don't ever forget that. Deep within our bowels, there's a flourishing miniature ecosystem called the gut microbiome, a delicate balance of bacteria that has a big say in our health and our digestive system. Now, scientists in Belgium have identified 69 different factors from chocolate to contraception that influence the makeup of our gut microbiomes. It is not what we ingest either. It also includes our sleep, our habits, and our lifestyle, and they all have an impact on our internal balance of bacteria as well. Researchers hope that the study will lead to a better understanding of these microbiota and how we keep them healthy and how we treat diseases in this part of our body. Some of the findings were expected. Amounts of fruit and fiber that we eat have long been known to have an influence on the health of our gut. Other factors, though, were less well established, such as whether or not people eat dark milk or white chocolate, and the types of hormonal contraceptives they use, anti-inflammatory drugs, antihistamines, and the level of alcohol we intake were also flagged up in the study as changing the balance of our microbiota deep within our bodies. Now, from somebody who had severe allergies for a lot of years and had to take Benadryl every day to be able to just function in my job, that was back in the days when I was working in a big bank vault, and we had millions of physical collateral files that were 20 and 30 years old. And oh my God, I would walk into that room and it felt like there were insects running all over my body the second I walked in there from the dust. And I'm sure that there were dust mites, so maybe there were bugs running all over me. But, you know, I had to physically take Benadryl every day before I went to work. And then we found out just recently that Benadryl, as well as other antihistamines, could be responsible for dementia. Remember that story? Well, now they're finding that antihistamines affect your gut bacteria. And we know now that gut bacteria can directly influence your brain. So that might be the connection. In fact, the factors with the strongest influence turned out to be the shape and the consistency, which, okay, of the individual's bowel movements, which is perhaps to be expected. In the study, 1,100 volunteers were analyzed, filling out detailed surveys on their diets, lifestyles, and habits, as well as undergoing blood tests. We've turned these people inside out, not literally, and we've compared all their microbiota data that we could get our hands on. This is the largest study of its kind carried out so far, and it gives scientists a deeper insight into how our digestive system works. We still don't fully understand exactly what makes the healthy gut microbiome, but we do know that an unhealthy one can lead to several diseases, including cancer. Our gut bacteria is also linked to mental health and conditions such as obesity. And now we found out that obesity can be contagious as those microbiota become aerosolized. But it makes you wonder, there was a story one time a while back that we read about mental health could potentially be contagious as well. And if your gut microbiota is tied directly to your mental health, well, that's kind of a scary thing. You know, they used to tell us, that's not a disease you can catch, but it's very possible that it is. And as research progresses further down the line, it is possible that your doctor could tell you to eat more milk chocolate to improve your gut health, for example. However, all these 69 factors only account for about 7% of the variations in the microbiome. The researchers think that, yes, genetics may also play a role overall. The rates say that it is also possible that the bacteria themselves shape the pattern of their own ecosystem. Well, it's a good balancing act is what it is. You got these five colonies and everything that you touch and do and interact with affects them in one way or another. I am certain, you know, taking antibiotics and the overprescription of antibiotics for 20 plus years of our lives caused damage. We saw in that clip we heard at the beginning of the show yesterday from Rob Knight, him talking about two things with infants. One, being delivered C-section via being delivered naturally. The C-section babies do not get the proper vaginal bacteria culture, and they now are researching how that could affect them later in life in regards to future diseases that they could form. The other one is giving antibiotics to children under two before their entire microbiome has fully developed. And that is an issue. I know that I mentioned that there are, I know of issues already from personal experience with family members of taking antibiotics before 2 years old. My sister had the stripy teeth syndrome because of her pneumonia that she had to be treated for as a baby. And who knows how that affected her later in life or how that affected the development of any type of things that require the same materials as teeth, let's say. I know that she has major hip issues. She had to have a hip replacement at like 35 years old, which is very rare. And though bad hips run in my family, I don't seem to have, knock on wood, I don't seem to have that issue, but she and my mother both do. But at 35, having a hip replacement and her entire hip degenerated, and knowing that she had antibiotics pre 2 years old and knowing that it affected her teeth directly really makes you wonder if they are not related in some way, shape, or form. Anyway, all right, so what I'd like to do now, if I can connect here, and I don't know, Skype was going into not responding mode when I was trying to connect to this machine right as the show was starting, but we're going to see. Maybe it'll let me connect. I want to listen to this interview with Dr. Mercola and Dr. Perlmutter about the gut microbiome. Dr. Perlmutter is a neuroscientist, and he discovered a long time ago that there was a direct connection between what was going on in the gut and issues that they have with the brain. He's written a few books and done all kinds of research, and now he's going to talk about it. And this was an excellent interview. I don't know if we're going to listen to the whole thing because it's like 22 minutes, pretty long. But I want you guys to hear what he has to say because this is going to establish a lot more of what we're going to talk about here, where we look at some of the things now that they are doing to our food and how that is influencing us. So let's see if we can get connected. Yep, and there's no echo, which means that my volume is turned down. There we go. All right. Dr. Mercola and Dr. Perlmutter.
On your brain. Hi, this is Dr. Mercola helping you take control of your health. And today I am joined by one of my good friends, Dr. David Perlmutter, who is here to talk to us about that topic, which is explored in great detail in his new book, Brain Maker, The Power of Gut Microbes to Heal and Protect Your Brain. So welcome and thank you for joining
us. Oh, it's always a pleasure. We always have a really great conversation.
We sure do. And I forgot to – I neglected to mention, just to provide some more information about you that our listeners and viewers may not be aware, but you're a board-certified neurologist, fellow of the American College of Nutrition, and actually I was able to get into that too thanks through your assistance, and lots of awards. Last time you were not only a New York Times bestseller, but number one bestseller for a number of weeks with your previous book called Grain Brain. So I'm sure that you're going to see equal success because you are really a mover and a shaker. You're getting phenomenal exposure in the media, and you're really one of the primary movers of this information, which is really contrasted to the traditional model that provides this natural approach. And we need this, the public needs it so badly, and I'm just so glad you're a really great advocate for it.
Well, I appreciate that. And you know, my roots are in the field, beginning in neurology. That's, you know, what I did. I practiced traditional neurology from the get-go. And, you know, what became so frustrating to me was neurology is a field, I don't mean to be too derogatory, but, you know, sometimes you have to light the candle, but other times maybe curse the darkness just a little bit. And it's really a field of pretty much a diagnose and then adios, meaning, you know, we make a diagnosis, we name something, whether it's Alzheimer's or Parkinson's, and then pretty much that's the best you can do. We don't have treatments for the underlying conditions, for Alzheimer's, for Parkinson's. Yeah, the symptoms of Parkinson's can be treated, and the symptoms of a headache, for example, can be treated with pain medication, much as the same way. But we're now recognizing from research at our most well-respected institutions from around the globe that, as you mentioned, who knew? The gut bacteria are wielding this very, very powerful sword of Damocles, determining whether we're going to have a healthy brain or not, whether our brain is going to function well or not, and whether our brain is going to become diseased or not. And who knew that we'd be referring back to the gut? And, you know, it turns out that this notion of what is called reductionism, where the body is reduced to its individual parts, the brain is in Cleveland and the gut is who knows where and down in Florida, it is really a kind of a very silly notion. Every system in the body interrelates in a way that ultimately, hopefully, will cause the manifestation of what we call health and disease resistance. And, you know, that said, it's humbling. It's humbling to think that we're able to have this conversation right now because of the fact that we've got healthy bacteria in our gut that are sending good signals to our brains and allowing us to function.
Yeah, that seems to be one of the primary mechanisms of action of how a healthy diet works, is that it upregulates and modifies and improves the quality of the gut microbiome.
Exactly. And, you know, these bacteria, these 100 trillion bacteria that live within the gut, are so intimately involved in the brain at a number of levels. They manufacture neurochemicals, for example, things like dopamine and serotonin. They manufacture important vitamins that are important to keep the brain healthy. They also maintain the integrity of the lining of the gut. And why that is germane for our brain discussion is because when the gut lining is not maintained and we have permeability or leakiness of the gut because the bacteria are imbalanced, that increases inflammation. And why?
We're going to stop for a second. Oh, hold on. I notice he mentions the production of dopamine as being a part of your microbiota. And again, he mentioned the leaky gut. Having bad gut bacteria causes your gut to leak, which is the root of inflammation, and inflammation is the root of disease.
Why are we having a discussion about inflammation? Basically, because it's the cornerstone of everything bad that can go wrong in your brain, like Alzheimer's, MS, Parkinson's, autism, etc. So we've got to really deal with, on a preventive basis, understanding what it is going on in our society, in our Western culture, especially from a dietary perspective, that is threatening the health of our commensals. We call these bacteria commensals because they share the table with us. We eat together with the bacteria. Basically, they eat what we eat. And our food choices have a dramatic effect on the health viability and even the diversity of those gut bacteria. So it matters a whole heck of a lot. It's well beyond the brain. It's every degenerative condition that you can think of. There is actually a fingerprint of the gut bacteria, a characterization that goes along with type 2 diabetes. Changes in the gut bacteria that may actually not be because of the diabetes, but may actually have a role in causing the diabetes itself. Let me tell you an interesting study that came out. There's a researcher in Amsterdam, a Dr. Max Neerdorp, and in he's really published a lot of the work looking at the changes in the microbiome in the gut bacteria that is characteristic of type 2 diabetes. He took over 250 type 2 diabetics and did a procedure called fecal transplantation. He actually transplanted the gut bacteria via feces from a healthy, lean person into the diabetics basically reversed diabetes in more than 250 individuals. That's astounding. This was not medication with side effects. He changed the makeup of the gut bacteria and the diabetes situation went away. The gut microbiome, that's 99% of the DNA in your body. That is highly responsive and changeable based upon lifestyle choices, most importantly, our food choices.
I want to stop again. He just said that the gut microbiome or the bacterial DNA is 99% of the DNA that makes up our body. I mean, how amazing is this? We've been washing our hands with antibacterial soaps and over-medicated with antibiotics for a couple generations now. And we've been trying to keep ourselves clean, getting the dirt out of your nails, staying away from the animals. And we've been damaging ourselves, I think. We've been damaging ourselves for trying to be, quote unquote, too clean and trying to sanitize everything when the bacteria itself is what is responsible for life itself, it appears.
And for me, you know, being a brain specialist dealing with brain disorders, my whole professional career, I've been stymied by not having really powerful tools to implement to bring about changes in individuals who have these issues. Now we're beginning to get those tools, and they are in the gut. Who knew? I mean, I can assure you that in neurology school, we didn't study what the makeup of the gut bacteria were and how that would ever influence the brain. And yet, this is leading edge science. This is what our most well-respected researchers and peer-reviewed journals are talking about. And that is, not only are the gut bacteria fundamentally involved in brain health, but you can change the gut bacteria by interventions, by taking probiotics, by choosing to eat foods that are rich in prebiotics to enhance the growth of good bacteria. How in the heck did we get here in the first place? What are we doing in terms of our lifestyle choices today that are messing up our gut bacteria? We know that, for example, when you look at gut bacteria in rural populations, in less advanced populations, even today, one study came out looking at the gut microbiome in Burkina Faso, which is in Africa, and looked at a couple of things. Number one, the amount of what are called short-chain fatty acids that the bacteria produce, which was a lot higher. We need those short-chain fatty acids. But more importantly, the diversity of organisms, the multitude of different species that they found, in contrast to the what is found in Western cultures, which is far less diverse. And even more intriguing are studies that are coming out now that are able to determine the human microbiome from as long ago as 5,000 years, looking at fossilized fecal material called coprolites and doing DNA analysis and revealing that, in fact, the cosmopolitan microbiome that we have now is unlike anything humans have ever had. Now, when you recognize that this gut microbiome is 99% of our DNA, we realize there's been very little change in that DNA, at least for the past 5,000 to 6,000 years. And now it's dramatically changed and created.
Ding. He just said that our DNA has not changed much in the last 5 to 6 million years. But now we have these dramatic changes. And just listen to this next segment because, you know, they were all befuddled as to how this is happening. But, you know, the people that have been saying that they are changing our DNA, and, I mean, we've kind of looked at some of that and some of the evil that's being done by the mad science gone mad and some of these transhumanists saying, oh, human 2.0 is on its way. You know, when you listen to this very well-credentialed medical doctor who's done a lot of research and you hear him say that our DNA is being changed and is being changed at a breakneck pace never before seen, this has really got to make you worry. Hold on here. Let's put him back on.
Creating gut bacteria that increase inflammation, that increase the harvest of calories from the food that we eat, associated with increased body fat and obesity, that change the way we respond to insulin and glucose, and changing a lot of our metabolism and increasing inflammation. And again, that leads to everything bad that you don't want to happen, from heart disease to diabetes, cancer, Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, MS, and the list goes on.
Hold on one second. I want to rewind this.
For the past 5 to 6
looking
at fossilized fecal material called coprolites, and doing DNA analysis and revealing that, in fact, the cosmopolitan microbiome that we have now is unlike anything humans have ever had.
Now, dang! Hold on. I hate this echo. They dug up fossilized fecal material. They looked at the DNA and the microbiome in the fecal material, and what our microbiome looks like now is nothing like we have ever seen in history of humans.
When you recognize that this gut microbiome is 99% of our DNA, we realize there's been very little change in that DNA, at least for the past 5 to 6 thousand years, and now it's dramatically changed. And creating gut bacteria that increase inflammation, that increase the harvest of calories from the food that we eat, associated with increased body fat and obesity, that change the way we respond to insulin and glucose. And
so this poison food and these medications and things that they've been feeding us and the stuff in our environment has changed our DNA to where our body and our DNA are not properly processing the nutrients that go into it. They make obesity, they make insulin resistance, they give us diabetes and Alzheimer's and depression. It is our environment that is changing our DNA in our body so it is not working properly any longer.
Changing a lot of our metabolism and increasing inflammation. And again, that leads to everything bad that you don't want to happen, from heart disease to diabetes, cancer, Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, MS, and the list goes on. So rebuilding the gut bacteria, that's key. But even to take a step back, how do you preserve it in the first place? There is this beautiful dance that happens between the gut bacteria and our own DNA, that the gut bacteria actually influence the expression of our 23,000 genes. Think about that. The bugs that live within us are changing our genome expression moment to moment. And our genome has been very static, has not changed over thousands and thousands of years. Suddenly, now, because we're changing our gut bacteria, we are changing the signals that are going to our own DNA, coding now for increasing things like free radicals, oxidative stress, and inflammation. And that is a powerful player in terms of so many disease processes. So on the one hand, that's kind of scary business. But on the other hand, let's put a positive spin on that and indicate that this glass is half full, because we now understand that by paying attention to the microbiome, by reducing our consumption of antibiotics every time we have a sniffle, by being judicious in terms of the foods that we eat, by choosing to eat organic foods and choosing non-GMO foods, for example, by choosing to have our children through natural childbirth as opposed to depriving them of obtaining their microbiome by passing through the birth canal, These are all very relevant lifestyle choices that we can make to enhance the health and the diversity of the gut bacteria, and that's going to give us a lifelong advantage in terms of being resistant to the very diseases that we dread the most.
Listening to this doctor, I'm horrified. Everything that he said, everything that he mentioned as far as our food and the GMOs and the antibiotics, and I don't know if he mentioned the antibacterials somewhere in here, one of them do. We've been devastated. They've devastated Western population. All these diseases that we are plagued with now and we're dying from daily, that the pharmaceutical industrial complex is now cha-ching cashing in on, was all manufactured by the Western lifestyle. You know, doctors scheduling C-sections for women, and they actually pushed it. You know, I've been reading a lot that that's, you know, in the busy lifestyle of the Western world, you know, let's do it at Tuesday at 9. And they're scheduling childbirth. It's one thing if you're in an emergency and in intensive care, but it's another thing if you're scheduling it like it's another appointment and it's damaging future generations. I mean, how horrifying is this? And this gentleman, Dr. Perlmutter, I am imagining is probably not part of the medical industrial complex anymore if he is talking about how the medical industrial complex has destroyed our DNA through destroying our microbiome.
Now, one of the things you mentioned, the dangers of not having the right foods and this improved gut microbiome, is that you get this leaky gut, which you had mentioned leads to inflammation, but it also leads to autoimmune diseases like MS and Lou Gehrig's disease when it comes to neurological conditions, but certainly Crohn's and inflammatory bowel disease. So I'm wondering if you can comment on your experience with the autoimmune diseases and what types of improvements you've seen by changing the gut.
Without a doubt. And again, I mean, who would have thunk it? You know, who would have thought that I would be discussing with you multiple sclerosis, a brain-related disorder, being involved in leakiness of the gut, and also, with all due respect, also leakiness of what is called the blood-brain barrier. Many of the factors that affect permeability of the blood-brain barrier are similar to those that affect the gut.
Ding.
So we're able to measure the permeability of the gut lining by looking at a chemical called LPS. And LPS means lipopolysaccharide. I don't mean to get too technical, but it's the covering over certain groups of bacteria in the gut. So simply stated, when you measure higher levels of LPS, or antibodies against LPS in the bloodstream, it's a marker of gut leakiness. The other thing to know about LPS is it is in and of itself a powerful instigator of the inflammatory cascade. Higher levels of LPS in the blood dramatically increase inflammation throughout the body, not just in the gut, but everywhere in the body, including the brain. So when you read the research about LPS, you see that there are dramatically elevated levels of LPS correlated with things like Alzheimer's disease, a leaky gut being part of Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and you mentioned Lou Gehrig's disease. Now, you know, it takes us out of the arena of looking at the brain. We see dramatically higher levels of LPS in Lou Gehrig's disease, and it correlates the level of LPS, a marker of gut leakiness, correlates with the severity of that disease. We see it in diabetes. We see it also even in autism. Higher levels of this marker of gut permeability. Now, does that mean it's causing the problem? Oh, no, you could never draw such a conclusion, although I did. Between you and me, I think it's quite clear. Look, these are all inflammatory disorders, and this LPS is a powerful marker of inflammation and an instigator of inflammation. So we're never supposed to say, well, correlation means causation. I believe it. So that said, what have we done in the clinic? We restore gut health and watch what happens. And in fact, in BrainMaker, I present pretty aggressive treatments for maintaining and restoring gut health. using a variety of techniques, from using what are called probiotic enemas to even going as far as having people get what are called fecal transplantation. We talked about it earlier. And do we see success? We sure do. I have a case history in BrainMaker of a young man with MS who couldn't walk without two canes and then underwent a series of fecal transplantations in Europe and came back and walks without any assistance whatsoever. His videotape is linked from the book and is on our site. I use a video of this man walking when I do lectures to physicians. And they look at this with their jaws hanging because, again, you know, for you and me, this was never even a consideration in medical school. The gut was something that was full of terrible things that could contaminate your surgical field that you just paid no attention to. And if you did pay any attention to the gut, why, you would become a gastroenterologist. Otherwise, there'd be no interest in looking at it. But it turns out that it's relevant whether you're a gastroenterologist, a neurologist, a psychiatrist, a joint specialist, a skin specialist, or even a cancer specialist. We've got to pay attention to nurturing these bacteria if we're going to keep people healthy. Can you?
Who would have thought that fecal transplants a year ago when we first read about them could potentially be the cure to all diseases? But notice he said neurologists, gastroenterologists, and psychiatrists as one of the fields that should be paying attention, because we're going to find out that there is that direct connect between the gut and the brain and your mental health as well.
Can you imagine that the bacteria within your gut correlate with your mood, correlate with things like depression and anxiety? We now understand that depression is at its core an inflammatory disorder, that markers of depression are dramatically elevated, of inflammation are dramatically elevated in correlation with depression. I mentioned earlier about lipopolysaccharide or LPS. Just like in Alzheimer's, with major depressive disorder, the level of LPS, a marker of gut leakiness and inflammation, is dramatically increased, correlating with major depressive disorder. It's inflammatory. One of the important reasons that food in America is genetically modified, and clearly understand that in Europe, they laugh at us for eating genetically modified foods. But that said, one of the main reasons is to allow the growing of crops to be what's called Roundup resistant, to allow crops to be grown so they can be treated with Roundup or glyphosate, the active ingredient, which then destroys the weeds, but also tends to ripen the crops that it's sprayed upon. Like here in Florida, where you and I live, our sugar crops are just painted with glyphosate. Very scary proposition, because we do know, the research is demonstrating, that glyphosate does in fact change the microbiome. It changes bacteria.
Well, that's how it works. That's why it works as a weed killer, because it destroys the beneficial microbes and fungi in the plant's roots that allow it to be resistant to disease.
And it's according to Dr. Huber,
does the same thing when they transfer it to our gut.
And we're eating that. And we're eating that in America. And we have no way of knowing it, because there's no labeling of foods.
It's probably more dangerous than the genetically modified food.
Well, again, we don't know where we're going with genetically modified foods. No. But the glyphosate is a clear and present danger. And, you know, globally, it's being measured in the thousands of metric tons of this stuff applied to our food. Gregory Bateson, a anthropologist from Harvard, stated that man is the only animal who will befoul his own nest, a sure sign of madness. Meaning, you know, you don't poop where you eat. You don't contaminate yourself. Although these days you've got to wonder about that a little bit. Now we're talking about the microbiome. But that said, we're poisoning our food that we eat. And if that's not bad enough, that's the food that we're feeding our microbiome that basically are going to determine whether we live or die.
Dang.
So it's a bit of a worry. And, you know,
and as, They actually are spraying about £1 billion a year of glyphosate annually, of which the average person is consuming about 200 pounds of GMO foods loaded with this stuff.
Yeah, and well, if you'd like to say, well, okay, from this day on, I'm going to decide not to eat a GMO food. So when I go to the grocery store moving forward, based on what I've learned about genetically modified foods, I'm going to choose the ones that are labeled non-GMO. But that doesn't make a lot of sense when you live in a place where there is no GMO labeling. But now we're seeing it more and more.
Which is the U.S.
That's the, most of our states, yes. So I'd say that, you know, what you can look for is the word organic, USDA certified organic. And I think that's going to give you some measure of protection that the foods were not genetically modified. So in a way, it does tend to encompass. But buying organic foods is a good thing to do for a number of reasons, not the least of which you're voting with your wallet. You're telling the grocer that you prefer organic food. And the more people that buy organic food, the more the grocers are going to stock them, the more then their providers are going to have to grow those foods. So there'll be a bigger and bigger trend towards organic, which is growing, like the gluten-free trends have been growing. So we're seeing that, and it's a good thing because people are educating themselves and beginning to understand that food matters. Our world in Western cultures is a sterile one. We're bombarding our microbiome with foods that lack bacteria. The very bacteria that we have, we are compromising by our incredible overusage of antibiotics to treat viruses, which doesn't make sense, as well as the antibiotics that go into our food, not to mention, you know, the hand sanitizers on the end cap in every grocery store aisle.
Ding. And
God forbid we should have bugs on our hands. So, you know, the message is let kids play in the dirt. Kids eat dirt. And there's nothing wrong with that, provided the dirt is not contaminated by some industrial spill. We've always eaten dirt. We've always eaten food off the ground. And as a matter of fact, at the end of the day, it turns out that's probably good for us.
If you have an interest in this area, and I don't know why you wouldn't, and you've been intrigued with the discussion that Dr. Perlmutter and I have, then it makes perfect sense to pick up a copy of Brain Maker, which is on.
And then there you go. Hold on.
Let me just listen to this here.
That was an excellent interview. There's a full 58-minute interview. That was just an excerpt of probably 15 minutes or so that we listened to. But, Dr. Perlmutter is a neurologist. And, he himself sounded very surprised that your microbiome had such an influence on your bodily function. And not just your physical health and the development of inflammation and disease, but also your mental health. There's a story that is listed in the National Library of Medicine from the National Institute of Health called The Gut-Brain Axis, The Missing Link in Depression. The gut microbiota is essential to human health, and the immune system plays a major role in the bidirectional communication between the gut and the brain. And based on evidence, the gut microbiota is associated with metabolic disorders such as obesity, diabetes, and neuropsychiatric disorders such as schizophrenia, autistic disorder, anxiety disorder, and major depressive disorders. Now, we had been talking about how if, when we looked at that personality transplant between mice yesterday, and the doctor was talking about fecal transplants as curing all kinds of diseases, we can get good probiotics from products that we purchase. You know, he was mentioning yogurt. You also can get probiotics in some of your super greens or whatever. But here's the thing. If we are affected directly by the microbiota that is put into our gut, and we're affected mentally, who is to say that as they're understanding this more and more, they're not doing some sort of experimentation on the food supply to see whether or not, oh, I don't know, they can make people more depressed? in a population or whether or not, they can make people get angry and have anger disorders. We found that already, again, with the toxoplasmosis, that bacteria that comes from cat fecal material, not only can your cat control you with it, but they also think that it's responsible for rage disorder. They found some evidence of that. So we have a story out of MIT News. We're going to run out of time here, but I guess this is where we're probably going to kick it off tomorrow. Reprogramming gut bacteria as living therapeutics. We have a new company named Synologic. They are a startup, and Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has invested in them. And as we know that microbiota can control our moods and our brains to some extent, we should be very worried that government and technology-esque companies, and I'm sure Google is probably involved in here somewhere. I haven't looked it up, but I bet I could find a connection. That they're learning ways to manipulate and make synthetic bacteria that then can be put inside of us to do things. And this new company named Synlogic is creating synthetic bacteria. And hold on 1 second. Their mission statement is local programming of the microbiome using synthetic biology to enable therapeutic impact throughout the body. So put on a seatbelt for that one. Last but not least, new mental health assessment tool comes out, and it expedites patients' crime risk evaluation. Knowing that Tommy Insel from the National Institute of Mental Health has gone to Google and is coming up with smart apps to be able to diagnose mental health, it should make you worry that our microbiome affects our mental health. And now they are coming out with health assessment tools to be able to expedite the diagnoses as to whether or not you not only have mental illness, because remember, it happens on a spectrum, but whether or not you're going to do crime in the future. It is here, people. All right, make sure you stick around because it is Tuesday. Mr. Kevin Blanche is live up next at 3 p.m. Eastern, the Ocelli Effect, brand new with Chuck Ocelli, Cutting Through the Matrix with Alan Watt, live 7, Game On with Ron, 8, Our Interesting Times with Tim Kelly, 9, The Boys from Private Time, live in a 10, S.M. Gibson. All right, guys, have an awesome Tuesday. I'll catch up with you tomorrow. Take care.